So Mom, among others, was a charter member of the Hadassah organization. And I knew then what Hadassah was, known as Palestine then. I always wanted to go to Jerusalem. L'shana habah b'Yerushalayim. Okay. So I decided, after the Six-Day War, in fact, only a couple of months after they were done, so I wrote to the director of anesthesia of the Hadassah Hospital, Terry Davis, who was a Glasgow-born, as I found out later, Zionist. I mean, Schultz. Wrote to him. He says, I don't know about osteopathic doctors. Give me a resume of your training. So I made photocopies of all my Albert Einstein Medical Center Northern Division papers that I had. Gave individual copies of all the papers I wrote. I have written 23 papers on anesthesia that were published in the world literature. Sent them copies of each one of my papers. A photostatic copy of my Delaware license, my Pennsylvania license. At that time, I didn't have a license in Florida. I just gave it up because I never intended to go, but my wife wanted me to have a Florida license.
Just in case.
Just in case. Well, anyhow, so I sent him all those. And the first thing you know, I got a letter of acceptance. When are you able to be there? So we went in April of 1968, Sissy and I, the first of our 14 trips to Israel. And I started like scratch, like I'd never been there, like I'd been there all the time at the Kennedy Hospital. A hospital's a hospital. An operating room's an operating room. I got the schedule. I was assigned cases.
What hospital?
Hadassah Hospital.
Hadassah.
At Ein Kerem, on top of a big, big, big hill overlooking the... And we stayed. We were given... Sissy was with me. We were given lodgings in the John F. Kennedy building where the postgraduate students stayed. And since Sissy was always active in Hadassah then, he became acquainted with the lady who was in charge of volunteer work there. They had a special name for it. Sissy could tell you. Anyhow, we started. We slept on army cots, the same thing, low cots. You could touch the floor with your hand. And also, we had tickets to eat our meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I used to eat breakfast. I was up early, 6:30, because the day started at 7:15. Before they fixed it up, even while I was I came, in April, in the operating room, you won't believe this, there were windows screened to let in some air. Not the place that you see today, or the Mount Scopus deal, because Mount Scopus was not there. It had been taken over by the Jordanians until the Six-Day War. It was ruined. Sissy and I went to the Mount Scopus Hospital. All we saw were bricks and barbed wire. But one thing had not been harmed, and that was a mug and David in the lobby, I think, in some reference to Henrietta Zoll. I'm not sure. My wife could help me out on that. So we stayed there for 2.5 months. I got a wonderful letter, so did Sissy, of appreciation for the time
that you had spent.
We spent there, and then I went at a subsequent time also.
So you periodically have been going. Do you always go to the Hadassah Hospital?
No. We have family there.
Uh-huh.
We have a cousin, Haifa, who was born in a displaced persons camp, and whom we used to send when they moved to Haifa. We used to send care packages there. We didn't know whether they got them because we used to correspond. Mm. Their name at that time, they were Polish and Russian. Their name was Latushka. And then they changed it after they moved to Haifa. They changed it to Bar Ishai. That's their Israeli Hebrew name, Bar Ishai. Uh-huh. My cousin Israel, Bar Ishai, lived with us for 6 years. We brought him over here. He went to college
in Wilmington.
In Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
And went to Wilmington College, then went to Temple and took up courses in communication. But he went back to Israel. And he was in the army. He was in the Six-Day War, the young kid of 18, when we first met him on Allenby Road in Haifa, a green kid in camouflage, you know, uniform. He was a member of an elite group called the Golan Brigade, who took the Golan Heights.
Hmm.
And when you go, you've been there. When you see the Golan Heights, you wonder how the hell they climbed up all that steep stuff. He had a Uzi gun, machine gun with him, and a rifle, two things. We met him at his father's home, mother's home, in Allenby Road.
Hmm.
Subsequently, his father died. Then, a couple of years ago, his mother died. We went there for her funeral. We felt an obligation.
Hmm.
And we went to the funeral. They had two children, Israel and Khedra. Khedra married an Iraqi, who was in part of the Jews who escaped through the underground from Iraq, which was organized by a man, I should know his name, who's a speaker in the Knesset. Hillel somebody, I forget. He organized the underground. And most of the Jews were gotten out of Iraq. However, there were some unfortunates. And the Iraqis are just as bad as the Syrians. They don't like Jews. They were hanging Jews from the lamppost in Baghdad.
Mm.
I remember that.
Well, you went, the first time you stayed, several months, but subsequently you went to various places.
We toured.
But sometimes you went and stayed and worked for, how many years did you work in hospitals?
Oh, you mean in Israel?
In Israel.
Only at Hadassah.
But how, you went back more than once.
Oh, yeah, sure. I went there one day, let's see, I was there in, before we came the first visit. Subsequently, there was a raid on a PLO camp in Jordan. After all, we were only, what, 9 miles from the Jordanian border at that time, or something like that. And Hadassah had a heliport. The day I was there with my sister Molly and my brother-in-law Ben, they had an episode which is still remembered as a loss for the Israelis. They kind of took a terrible beating from the Jordanians, who somehow had been informed that an Israeli force was coming there. And the wounded were coming in like mad on the gynecological ward. The outpatient ward was all set up already to treat the wounded and the near dead.
Mm-hmm.
IVs from every cot and all that. Several times what we've been there, they had things ready for other episodes. The 1973 war, I called up from Pasadena, California, where I was going to a medical meeting, and I spoke to Dr. Davidson. See, I belong to the American Fellowship for Israel Medical Organization that gets called, they promise volunteer. I called up Terry. I says, Terry, do you need me? I could come tomorrow. This is from California.
Yeah.
He said, Abe, we have so many guys coming in from South Africa and France, you would only be in the way. So would other Americans.
So you didn't go?
No. How did I know about the Mahoma in 1973? We were in Shul. Yom Kippur. We leave for intermission. It was a conservative synagogue, and a man is sitting out at on a chair. He says, "Bus hasta from the Mahoma?" And I said, "What Mahoma? You racing it? Menot hashtayt doctor in Israel. You have to have a war." And you know, the rabbi came out and he said, "I want everybody to forget it's Yom Kippur. I know some of you have checkbooks with you. Some of you have money. And we have plenty of paper. You take out your pens, we'll supply this. I want you to write IOUs for a pledge." You know, in that half hour that he spoke, they must have collected about $300,000 from this one synagogue.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that
it was very moving.
It was.
Yeah.
And the first time we landed in Israel, I could see why people felt they want to kiss the ground.
Yeah.
We landed at Ben Gurion Airport. Molly and Ben, my sister, they went with us on that first trip. We had a guided tour. We had arranged for a guide to pick us here, to pick us there. I'll never forget when we went to a place called, they drilled for oil and found gas there. Arad. Arad was just a little hotel and a couple of houses. And I said to the fellow in charge, I said, "What do you do about the Israelis? What do you do about the Jordanians and the PLO?" And he says, "Look up at that hill. You see there? That's an armored personnel carrier. That's the Israeli Defense Force." You see one.
Well, so your involvement with Israel has been long and very emotional.
Yeah.
And so
I spoke to Israel last week.
Yeah.
To my two cousins.
Right.
One lives in Hadera. One lives in Haifa, who had just come home to get a couple nights sleep in his machine. He has an answering machine. A message from his commander: "Get back here as soon as you can." I have another cousin who lives in Herzliya. Do you remember the Rapelson family? Bernie Rapelson, who died?
His daughter.
His daughter lives there.
Right.
With her son, with her husband, Abe Tiber, who lived here in Wilmington for a while. Worked with the Pond Company. Well, he's an insurance business. They live in Herzliya. Yeah. And their three children.
Yeah, I know Sandy goes there regularly.
We stopped. We saw Sandy last year. We went down to Florida.
Right. You wanted to tell me something about Second Street.
Oh,
I sort of forgot.
The drugstore at Second and West. When I was in high school, I didn't know what I was going to do, really. At that time, my dentist was Matt Eisen, the late Matthew Eisen. I went to him one afternoon. He says, Matt, I said, and he's with my dentist. I said, can I stay a couple of hours? Let me see what you do. I don't know what I'm going to be. He says, you'll like it. So, in between patients, he talked to people about the horses that he bet on, the stock market, and I said, this is not for me. It's confining. So, then I went to the drugstore at 2nd and West. Later on, he moved on West 4th Street, which is now an entire Hispanic neighborhood. His wife died recently. Oh, God almighty. What was that druggist's name at 2nd and West? Anyhow.
Bunnett.
Al Bunnett.
Yeah.
Al Bunnett. Thank you, dear. So I said, Al, how about if I stay with you for a while and see how you work? He says, I can't afford to pay you. I said, I'm not asking for money. I want to see if I like being the druggist. I learned how to make milk, how to make citrate of magnesia. In those days, you didn't go and buy citrate.
The
pharmacist made it. And he taught me how to make medicine in paper and fold them for different things.
Right.
I said, I can't stand this. It's too confining. Again, a doctor makes house calls. A doctor gets out more. I'll be a doctor.
You didn't go to watch a doctor.
No. But I just knew I wanted to be a doctor. I wasn't going to be confined in a place where I had to
be. You never wanted to be a plumber?
No. I had a scholarship to Carnegie Tech through my father's plumbing association. But I said, who wants to go to Carnegie Tech? They gave scholarships every year to the sons of master plumbers. First of all, while I worked with Pop, at 25th and Broome, the day Topkins built, the homes are still standing, I and another man dug the ditches for the saw pipe for the trenches. I mean, pick and shovel work. I could not stand the grease on my hand. I'd always have a rag with me to wipe it, and the more I wiped it, the dirtier it was ingrained. My own soap, give her my own soap, M-I-O-N-E, that would cut the grease and all that stuff. It was like a sand, it was like a sand. But you put it on your hands and you use water, and boy, you'd get a lather, it would cut all the grease. I said, that's one reason I don't want to be an engineer. Another reason, I'm not so good in mathematics. And if you're not good in mathematics, you're not good.
But did you need, a lot, in those days when you went to medical school, you didn't need that many sciences, did you?
Oh, you need it. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
In school, before school, I had 1 year credit by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania of chemistry, biology, and physics. You had to have those. In school, we learned physiological chem, more biology, the same as the MDs do. The course was the same. When Lou Shinfield was a Jeff and some of the other guys that I knew, we'd meet and talk to us.
You knew the same thing.
Same thing.
So your education was adequate, you felt?
I think
so.
Yeah. I felt in the beginning that it was, and that's why I went to Europe just for a factor. But I gave it up after a year because it took up too much time.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to deliver.
Were you involved in any other activities in Wilmington?
I always donated to Jewish causes. I was not active. In fact, people would say I'm an introvert, and I would say that myself. I wasn't a social going about, get about. But maybe I shortchanged myself. I don't know. As time went on, I became more outspoken, but basically, I loved seeing patients, listening to their problems, and trying to solve their problems. That was been my basic concept, even now. Except, I guess, I always was compassionate. I feel very, very badly because so many people don't get the proper care, especially those who have run out of money and those in what we call the lower socioeconomic classes.
One of the stories that I heard about you, Chuck Klein told me once, he came in and you were giving anesthesia and a patient needed blood and you had the right blood type. And you gave blood while you were... Yeah.
It was written up in the papers.
Well, tell us about it.
Did you ever hear of Ibox Cafe?
Yes.
The 14th and Scott. This was a relative of his whose doctor was Bernie Blackman. Bernie Blackman took care of her for a certain time and then turned her over to a surgeon, obstetrician that we had. He's dead now. Named Wallace, I think it's named. Well, anyhow, no one knew the kind of pregnancy she had until when the doctor examined her, Bernie Blackman did, hey, where's the baby's head? It's so high up. What's wrong? They did what was then rudimentary x-ray. Nothing like you have today. No ultrasound, no this, no that. Hey, this baby's in the abdomen, in the belly. So a cesarean section was scheduled. In those days, I would use spinal for a cesarean. It was the safest, it still is, believe it or not, if the patient accepts it. However, not knowing what was in there, could there be a pregnancy and a tumor also? I gave her a general anesthetic where I put her asleep, put a tube down her windpipe, and breathed for her. Lo and behold, the abdomen was opened up. The baby was not in the uterus as such. The placenta, the embryo, was attached to the intestines. So she was bleeding like a stuffed pig, as the proverbial saying goes. We had a type in RH on her anyhow to call for blood. And since I am right-handed, I had the anesthesia moved to my right, with bags so I could breathe. This was man. There's no automatic respiration in those days. And I gave anesthesia with my right hand, the bag breathed for her. And Dr. Mr. Dempsey, who's still associated with the hospital, he took blood from me, took a pint and a half of blood, said, how do you feel, Abe? I said, I feel fine. And that pint and a half was enough. Because they called all the hospitals. I had O, RH positive, the commonest blood, but the subtype they couldn't have. And I had the subtype. If you're interested, we have a copy of that.
Yeah, well, I think when you give me some material, I think you should include that in the material that you give me.
Okay.
Because I think we'd like to have that.
All right.
Are there any other incidents that you can think about while you were in practice?
While I was in practice. Let me think. Oh, I loved being in general practice, I told you, because the general practitioner, if he listens to his patient, can come up with a wonderful stock of stories. I mean, they're humorous, but they're real. For example, I can go back, and I'm sorry, is this still on?
Sure.
I opened up a free clinic at the Asbury Methodist Church when I first started the practice to try to get something. What did I do? I spoke to the minister, his name was Hill, I think. Anyhow, yeah, come in on Friday night. I said, gee, I can't, but that's the only night you can be there. Okay, so Friday nights I had a free clinic, and I would accumulate samples of medicine, and I treated people. In those days, the demographic concept was not as the way it is today. They were all poor white people on East Oak Street. Further down were black people. But people came in, I examined them.
White and black.
White and black came in? I didn't make any difference.
No, but did they both come, white and black?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started, I'm going to digress for one moment.
That's all right.
And there's a sore point in my memory. Since this is a southern state, believe it or not, when I started to practice, no hospital had a toilet or a fountain for everybody. You saw for colored only. That's every hospital. St. Francis, the old PNS, and then the Women's Dental Hospital, the Delaware Hospital, and the Homeopathic Hospital. That's been a sore point in me. That was only for white and colored. and especially below the Chesapeake Delaware Canal. I don't want to say anything that would be derogatory. Boy, it was bad. Anyhow, I had this clinic, and I gave the people samples with the event went to condition. But everybody got it, from ingrown toenail to dandruff, they got osteopathic manipulation with my hands, with my fingers. And strange to say, a lot of them got over their complaints, and I could not understand why, except I was taught that. Mm-hmm. Even today, one does know exactly what we do. Osteopathic doctors do not just treat backaches. They treat a variety of diseases like any other doctor would. But a lot of them use manipulation. Unfortunately, today you don't find too many doctors doing it. I do it. Several other doctors do it. Of course, medicine is not the answer. One of the first things I do with old people that come to my office, and when I make new people, I said, bring me a bag, give me all your medicine that you take. And I found out something very horrible. They've been to two or three or four doctors. Nobody asked
checks all that
on
medicine.
What the medicine you take. This was then. Now it's different. I belong, you asked me about my activities. I'm a member of the Committee on Aging for the Medical Society of State Delaware. We meet periodically on a Tuesday morning at 7:15. One of the first things that was done was to prepare things to find out what are these people taking. Today, with over-the-counter drugs, somebody is taking Motrin, but had been to another doctor who gave Naprosyn, which is a non-steroid, but you need a prescription for it. And here they were taking two non-steroids. Is it any wonder that maybe 20% of people older coming to emergency rooms are in bad shape?
Yeah.
They're sedated, they have this, they have that.
Yeah.
They have bleeding ulcers even.
I agree.
See, one of the first things I do with these old people is I chop the medicines in half right off the bat. And a lot of doctors are doing that. I'm not a paragon of virtue, because at one time I didn't know about it. I didn't bother.
Of course, but now everybody's
today
been alerted.
We're alerted that these older people whose bodies can't handle drugs, because not only are they maybe old in appearance, their kidneys are old, the heart's old, the liver's old. The organs that help to transform medicine into innocuous substances to be excreted by the liver or the kidneys.
Yeah.
Well, the medicine stays there longer. So that brings me more or less up to date.
Okay, well, I really want to thank you very much for giving us a history. I also would appreciate if you would go through your papers and see what you'd like to share with the Jewish Historical Society. Since we have this, it would be very nice to have some things.
Well, Pop's picture with the boat, this I can supply.
Okay.
The picture of in the operating room that was taken, I think it was taken in the operating room. I have the article about me giving anesthesia while somebody was drawing blood from me. It's a matter of record. That was in the morning news.
All right.
Oh, I forgot one thing. When we moved to 311 Shipley Street, I learned to sleep with all kind of noises. Why? My little bedroom, which was a 2x4 room, I want you to know, was between an extinct paper called the Sunday Star, and next door was the Morning News and Evening Journal. I remember as a kid watching the World Series on a manual operated board showing how the game was played. First base, a home run, second base.
The presses were on both sides. Right.
Saturday night were the linotype workers from the Sunday Star. The rest of the week at night were the linotype workers from the Morning News. And you'd hear the clatter of
now,
that.
You must be able to sleep with everything.
I can sleep anytime. Incidentally, A.J. Gross taught me how to catnap. The late A.J. Gross. I used to deliver babies at his private hospital. I mean, that's part. I used to work there too. To do stuff that you needed surgery with. I should do those. I had no hospital. You had to make shift with what you do.
Yeah.
It was almost like the Israelis saying when they asked, how come you're fighting waiting? Cain Brera.
No choice. Well,
that's about
I compliment you and I thank you.
You're welcome.